everybody. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us for another hour till Max and Orion take over with the morning show and you get along with your weekend. Joining us overseas, it's already early morning right now in London, where Julia McFarlane from the BBC joins us on the phone. Hey, Julia, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it as always. You know, I don't
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if you've been paying attention, but over here in America, there's kind of a lot of stuff going on. It's a little crazy here. So I thought
I noticed.
You guys have a lot of stuff going on too. So let's just forget about our world for a minute and let's talk about your world, because you've had kind of a really busy couple of weeks over there, haven't you?
Oh, I don't even know where to start. I mean, also this week there's been a lot going on. We've just been digesting the results of local elections all across England, Wales, and Scotland.
Now,
Can
I ask you a quick question? So explain to me your election process, because here it's very set. You guys call for elections. Is it the same thing with the local elections, or were those already just happening because they happen every 2 or 4 years like we do here?
The local elections, they happen every few years in certain council seats. So it wasn't the whole of the country that went to the local elections this year. It happens on a rotational basis. But because these local elections happened to be, because a general election was called and will be taking place just a month after, these results are particularly interesting because many think that what we saw yesterday across some key areas, some key battleground areas in Northern England and in Scotland, could be a precursor to how the country will go to the polls next month for the general elections.
Did I see a story that a party won a seat in Glasgow that they haven't held in like over four decades or something like that?
Exactly. So in the UK, we've been quite similar to over in America. We've more or less had a two-party system for decades and decades. It's been that way, I think, since the 1920s. Now, we had the Conservatives, who are the current party in government right now, the party of Theresa May, the Prime Minister. And for decades, it's been Labour, which has been the main opposition, but also under Tony Blair in government. And it's been back and forth, really, since the 1920s. But what has happened in the last few years, particularly with Scotland, has always been a Labour stronghold. So Labour is the left-wing party. It has a strong history with the workers' unions. It became elected on manifestos that aim to put working people first and businesses after. So what's happened in Scotland recently is Labour when Scotland went to the polls to decide on whether they wanted to be an independent country in 2014, Labour sided with the Conservatives and campaigned to stay as part of the UK. A lot of Scots saw that as a kind of betrayal, and so a lot of Labour voters turned from Labour in Scotland to the Scottish National Party, who were advocating for independence. And ever since then, the last couple of years, we've really seen Labour's support in Scotland trickle down to nothing. And they have held in council, so in the local elections, so in every part of the country, you've got local councillors, as well as your Member of Parliament. And in Scotland, you also have members of your Scottish Parliament. So we have millions of representatives. But Labour, the left-wing party, has held Glasgow. It's been a very left-wing city for decades, for almost 40 years. And yesterday it fell to the SNP. So that was a huge result. And the fact that Labour lost hundreds of council seats yesterday, the Conservatives gained hundreds of council seats under its very controversial across the country, Jeremy Corbyn, who has been criticised by his opponents for not providing the leadership that Labour needs right now. His supporters are steadfast behind him. They supported him twice in two Labour leadership elections. He blitzed away all of his opponents in the Labour Party. And his supporters say that he will have the support of the electorate. Now, of course, we'll just wait and see next month when the whole country goes to the polls.
Well, I mean, doesn't it look bad for him so far? Because you said that conservatives picked up a bunch of seats, Labour lost a bunch of seats. Is it looking like Theresa May made the right call in calling for elections, that she'll get reelected and her party will gain strength?
So it's interesting because we're all over here trying to figure out why Theresa May called this election. Now, we have a fixed term Parliament Act, which was introduced, I think, in 2011, and that meant that snap elections would only happen with a motion in Parliament or with a motion of no confidence in the Prime Minister from the party. So the idea was that elections could not be called, you know, out of political expediency, and that governments would get a set time in order to carry out their manifesto and to just keep things smoother. So Theresa May, we last had a general election in 2015. So Theresa May did not really have to call one for another 3 years. Now, she has been sort of grappling with the fact that the Tories at the moment are riding really high in the polls. Sorry, the Tories is the colloquial name for the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. They've been riding very high in the polls. They're in the situation where their opposition, the opposition party, Labour, since the Brexit referendum, has been not fighting as opposition against the Conservatives, but amongst themselves. There was a coup. There was a failed coup in last year where dozens and dozens of MPs resigned from the shadow cabinet, all in the space of 12 hours. That was one of the most nuts days I've ever had in the office, sort of running from one place only to get a call to say, oh, someone else has resigned, you've now got to go here. It was like nothing other. They were falling away like chips. And there was a vote of no confidence in the leader of the Labour, in Jeremy Corbyn. He had to see off challengers for leader of the party, and he got through. And this has been going on for for the last 10 months or so, that the Labour MPs have been openly divided and openly critical of their own leader. And at a time when the UK is now racked with such uncertainty over what's going to happen with Brexit, what bits of the EU are we going to keep, what's going to happen with negotiations, how is it going to affect our economy, how is the economic hit that we're going to take from leaving the EU going to affect our own budget and our own public spending, the electorate, understandably, is looking for stability. Now, Theresa May has been criticised a lot by the press recently for repeating the phrase strong and stable, almost a comical number of times every single time that she's interviewed. But it is the message that they're trying to hammer home, and they're particularly trying to hammer it home because the opposition, the only credible alternative to a Conservative government, is in disarray. So why did Theresa May call this election now when she could possibly enjoy years of not having an opposition?
Yeah.
Well, the timing is interesting. Article 50 will be completed by 2019. We will have gotten along the road more with our negotiations with the EU. We'll get a clearer picture of what's going to happen. And then we'll go to the polls straight after that. So that might be difficult for the Conservatives to go to the polls with. At the moment, Theresa May, she's a different kind of Conservative from David Cameron, her predecessor. Her hands are kind of tied with the manifesto that he set the government on in the last general election. There are things that she wants to change outside of Brexit, but her own sort of social political ideas that she wants to implement that she cannot because the party was elected on a different manifesto. So there's that. If they go to the polls now, then they have a good 3 years after Article 50 in which to sort of get all their ducks in the line and fight the next general election. Now, if Theresa May is sent back to Parliament with a huge majority, as many people do, a lot of people say that Jeremy Corbyn's leadership will be untenable. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he might stand down because he's surprised us before in the past. He may stay on, he may say that he does have the support of the party faithful, and that in theory is all you really need to be a party leader. So we don't know what's going to happen. But it does look like Labour is heading for a very, very difficult time after the general election. It looks like they're going to lose a lot of seats.
So basically, in a nutshell, best guess would be Theresa May's party, the Conservative Party, is riding high right now. But when the whole Brexit thing goes through, they would be due for an election, and that could be a really crazy time because you just don't know how that's going to shake out at first. So by holding an election now, when by all rights she should gain power, then she buys more time after Brexit goes through for them to kind of ride it out and try to get things stable so that the party can withhold power, because, you know, they didn't make Brexit happen, right? It was voted on, but she's going to carry the weight of it because she's the one that's going to see it through. So by getting reelected now, she buys a couple more years post-Brexit before she has to go through another election.
That's true. She buys a couple more years, but she also makes things a lot easier for herself politically if she does get a strong majority. At the moment, the government only has a majority of around 10 to 12.
Okay.
So at the moment, there are some people who joke that the main opposition in government at the moment is not Labour, but the backbench Tory MPs. So the backbench members of Parliament from her own party who want a stronger Brexit, a harder Brexit, and because the numbers are so crucial here, she cannot really face any Tory rebels on anything that she puts to Parliament. So there's that. There is also the fact that we have an upper house. We have an unelected upper house called the House of Lords, who are also, some people are calling, the only real viable opposition in government, who have the ability to send back bills and motions from the House of Commons should they want to. Now, at the moment, the Lords haven't gotten in the way of Article 50. They haven't gotten in the way of the Brexit process, but they could. And Theresa May no doubt feels that with the support of a referendum and a general election, it will be much harder for the House of Lords to mess things up for her with the Brexit process, whether it is putting down in paper that we will be leaving the single market. She said that we would be leaving the single market in her Article 50 speech, and other such bones of contention in the negotiations. So it's not just about giving herself more time, also getting through these next few years with such a slim majority as things currently stand, it's going to be difficult for her. So a majority, getting a bigger majority returned after a general election will help her considerably.
We're speaking with Julia McFarlane from the BBC. You can follow her on Twitter at Julia McFarlane. You're Scottish, Julia, and I know you've written about that from time to time. You mentioned the Scottish Nationalist Party and what's gone on there since Scotland narrowly didn't vote to leave the UK a few years ago. Will that come up for a vote again? Is there going to be a push to vote for secession from the UK again?
So the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, who is the leader of the Scottish Nationalist Scottish National Party, she has said that it is within Scotland's right to hold another independence referendum. That being in the light of the Brexit referendum and the fact that around 64-36 percent of Scottish people voted to stay in the EU. Now, there's been a lot of rhetoric about Scotland being taken out of the EU against its will. However, the majority of Scots, polling tells us, do not want another referendum. I mean, as a Scot, I can tell you the first referendum was painful enough. It was, unlike a lot of political referendums, even more so than the EU referendum, the Scottish referendum was one that was very emotional and full of passions because it is less about policy and inadvertent things and more about a sense of identity. So, of course, people felt very strongly and people were asked to go to the polls on, you know, on who they were, essentially. Do you feel British or do you feel Scottish? And it was an incredibly divisive time. It was full of heated arguments in the street, over the dinner table, in the pub, everything. The day-to-day running of government took a back seat, and so a lot of critical issues that Scotland is facing with were put to the side as this bitterly contested referendum played out. So the SNP say that they do want to hold another referendum, possibly following Brexit, possibly following the triggering of Article 50. We still don't really know how that's going to play out, because the SNP have been quite clever in how they've worded things, in the sense that they've worded things such as, we believe Scotland should hold a referendum, not exactly, you know, we plan on holding a referendum at this time. At the moment, Westminster needs to okay any referendum that Scotland goes to. Theresa May has not ruled it out, but she has said not now. She has said now is not the time for Scotland to go on another independence referendum when there is so much uncertainty with Brexit. Scots don't know what they'll be voting for.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know what is going to happen. We don't know whether Brexit will, you know, whether it will be better or worse than what we think it's going to be. We don't know whether we will, Scotland will get entry into the EU, and if so, you know, how long will it take before we're back in? Will we see a border, a hard border with England? All sorts of questions. And so Theresa May has said, we're not going to have one now. So there is this sort of threat of another referendum looming over the Scots at the moment. But one thing that is quite interesting is that the Scottish Conservative Party, they are the Tories in Scotland, but they have a slightly different identity. They have a very charismatic leader called Ruth Davidson, who has been widely credited with the resurgence of the party in Scotland. Now, I remember going to a local election in Glasgow when I was about 16 or 17, and I was canvassing with one of the parties, and I noticed that supporters of one of the Conservatives, they could not have any posters on their windows, for example, because they said that they would get bricks thrown in them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas supporters of Labour were all out, you know, in bright colours, with rosettes on them and posters everywhere, as well as the SNP. But the Conservatives were largely absent and in hiding. And that is because to be a Conservative in Scotland 5, 6, 7 years ago was kind of like being a leper. You know, you didn't tell people. You might know other Tories in Scotland, but you kind of, I don't know, maybe they had a secret handshake to identify themselves with. I'm not sure. That's completely changed now. In the Scottish Parliament elections last year, the Conservatives did the unthinkable, and they overtook Labour to become the second largest party in the Scottish House. So you've got the main party, which is the SNP, and their leader, Nicola Sturgeon, is First Minister. And the opposition party is the Conservatives. And a lot of that is because of bitterness and a sense of betrayal from Scottish voters of Labour, of Labour siding with the Tories over the referendum. And also because of I think a lack of popularity with the last Labour administration up in Scotland. So Ruth Davidson, who is this charismatic leader of the Scottish Conservatives, she's getting a lot of support. We saw her win a lot of council seats yesterday. She's now carving out this area for the Scottish Conservatives as the only unionist party. So she's saying to the Scots, if you do not want to go again to the polls on a question that we settled in 2014 over independence, you have to vote for me. And if she does get enough votes, if she gets enough people choosing the Tory ballot in Scotland, then that will give the SNP pause for thought. Whether they will delay the referendum or whether they will rethink remains to be seen.
Tony Blair is the last, to me, I mean, David Cameron, I know we know of your prime ministers. Tony Blair is the last one I really remember as there being like a, I don't know, just a very popular person over here. Like, we knew a lot about him, we heard a lot about him. When a leader retires, when a prime minister retires and goes away, do they still stay very active, or is Tony Blair ever heard from anymore?
Tony Blair is heard from time to time. He has said recently that he is mulling a return to politics. Mm. Now, in the aftermath of the Iraq War and everything that's happened, he is quite a divisive character in the UK. But he is also his victory in 1997 was of such historic magnitude, and that anniversary fell earlier this week. I think it was Tuesday or Thursday. Was 20 years since the 1997 elections, and he has been credited. Others would say blamed for changing the face of the Labour Party. Now when he was voted into power, it was on the platform of branding Labour as New Labour, which was a more centre-left party. It was seen as more pro-business, more of a centrist party than more over to the left side of the political spectrum. Now that widened Labour's appeal a lot more to a lot more metropolitan types, a lot more businesses, and as such, he was sent back to Parliament three times. So it's interesting because what Jeremy Corbyn has done has brought the party back more to the left. Now, when he first entered the contest for leader, he said that he wasn't seriously wanting to be leader. He just wanted to widen the debate because he felt that Labour had become too centrist, it had lost its identity, and it wasn't staying true to its base, which was working class, working voters and trade members and, you know, the real left-wing party base of people who feel like they are at the bottom of the food chain, that need representation and that are always coming up short and getting the shortest straw, particularly in a conservative government, which we had at the time, a conservative coalition government. So the party at the moment has gone a lot more to the left now since he's taken over. And so Tony Blair has he does media every now and then. He'll do an interview or he'll write an op-ed, and he has sort of floated the idea of coming back to back into politics. In what capacity, he hasn't said yet, but it would be interesting to see what happens, what he decides to do and how people will respond to that.
Yeah, no kidding. So much going on. We ran out of time. We didn't even get to your Duke of Edinburgh retiring, which was big news here this week in the States.
Oh,
the news stations broke in to report on this. I'll tell you what, can we check in with you in a couple of weeks as there's a lot going on over there with your elections coming up. I'd love to check in with you again. This was a lot of fun and really enlightening, and it got us away from our world for just a half hour, Julia. You just took us all.
It's just as mad on this side of the pond. Don't worry.
Well, I don't think you'd trade with us right now, Julia. I'm pretty sure you wouldn't, but we'll have to debate that next time. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Julia McFarlane from the BBC, at Julia McFarlane on Twitter. It's a great follow, so you can keep up with what's going on overseas. All right, Roger, it's 4:30 in the morning. Let's get upstairs and check the headlines, Mr. Baddish.